Greetings, Cap fans, and welcome to episode 60 of the Captain America Comic Book Fans Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Verbanis, and as always, I am joined by what some people may say, the best gosh darn co-host out there, and that would be Mr. Bob Lucius. Bob?
Are you ready to rock? Oh, I am, Rick. I am ready to rock. Yes.
Excellent.
Yes.
Excellent rock. Because we're going to be rocking this episode because we have a special guest joining us, Bob. And that would be Mr. Brian Polito, who is been a longtime career comic book creator, practically 30 years. Well, I think he's celebrating 30 years. As this episode comes out, and he is best known for his creations with Chaos Comics and recently Coffin Comics, of creating characters like Lady Death, Evil Ernie, Chastity, El Muerta, a long list of horror and supernatural and bad girl characters. He is also done rock and roll comics, and he's a big rock and roll enthusiast. So Bob, I thought, what better greeting to give you than Are you ready to rock?
It's all coming together now, Rick. It's all coming together. The amount of research that you do to prep is just, it's astounding.
I am a giver, Bob. Although my doctor says I'm a carrier. Give her a carrier, whatever you want to go with.
No extra charge, folks. It's all included. This is inclusive.
All right. So, Bob, wow, we're 60 now. Just seemed like 50 not too long ago.
It does.
It just goes by in a flash.
It does. It's a metaphor for my life. Yes.
It really is. It really is. So, we have Brian Polito on as a guest. What else we got going on?
I thought you were going to say Christmas is coming up. Bob takes a size large, if anybody wants to know.
That's right. The holidays are fast approaching. Yeah. And what better gift than to give yourself a Captain America, what would Cap do challenge coin? Right?
Nice.
These are really nice gifts, not only for yourself or for the Captain America fan in your life. How do you get it? Well, you can't buy it, but you can, we will give it to you, free of charge, shipping included, right? All you have to do is become a patron of the Facebook group and the podcast here. Go to our website, which is CaptainAmericaComicBookFans.com, and you will see on there how you can become a patron. If you join at the Shield Slinger level, which is only $4.99 a month, Bob. What can you get for $4.99 a month?
You can't get anything, Rick.
You can get like a comic book, right?
You could. Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Right. But you're going to get 4 to 5 podcasts a month.
Yeah.
Do you think we're worth a comic? I think we're worth a comic book, but you know.
Yeah.
But so anyway, if you become a patron at the Shield Slinger level for 3 months, we will send you, as our way of saying thank you, this What Would Cap Do coin, challenge coin.
Rick, I was kidding about the, size large, but not really. But we should dedicate a part of an episode to the best Cap gifts you've ever gotten.
Ooh.
From our listeners, right?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be totally cool?
Let's do that.
I think that'd be as a holiday special,
Well, it could be the best Captain America gifts you've got.
The worst? I know the worst.
It could be the worst.
You know what my worst is. Yeah, there's a certain oil painting out there in my likeness.
It could be the quirkiest, the funniest, outlandish, whatever you want to say. Yeah. Let's do that.
Fun.
Just totally do that. That should be let's make that episode 64, because that comes out a few days after Christmas. And that way, you know, if in case anybody got some Captain America gifts, we could all celebrate them.
Yes.
Or we can commiserate them or whatever they are. But it's the thought that counts.
Yes, it is. It is. Yeah.
Let's do that. All right. Episode 64. We will mention in there favorite, least favorite Captain America gifts.
Sounds good.
Oh, so Bob, I have a funny story that involves you.
Oh.
So my sister lives in Spain, right? She's lived there for a while. You should get one of those. What happened was, you know, she lived, you know, in America her entire life. One day she kind of got fed up.
Busted? Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, she got fed up and she's like, you know what? I'm going to sell my home, shut down my business, move to Spain.
Wow.
Right. I know. Wow. Right.
Yeah.
You know, we're all very amazed by her courage and her strength. And anyway, while she was there, you know, she met this this gentleman by the name of Sergio, and super nice guy, great guy. I've had a chance to meet him several times. The two of them are together and they decided to start listening to our podcast.
Oh my.
Right. And they said, where should we start? And I said, well, listen to episode one. I mean, you don't have to listen to them sequentially, but episode one, because, you know, hey, that's how I got into Cap, how Bob got into Cap. Mm-hmm. It's a short episode, you know, and we're not covering comic books and those particular ones. So, you know, check that out. So they did. Now my sister, she's visiting in town. And she tells me, oh, by the way, we listened to the first three podcasts.
Ooh, three.
I was like, oh, okay. So that's
by the way, that's one more than my wife. So, I mean, probably, that's two more than my wife. So.
It's probably three more than mine. So episode two is when we covered Strange Tales 114 and Avengers 4. We had Jesse Simon on, and episode three was when we did the Bloodstone Hunt, right?
Yeah.
So good for them. Now Sergio speaks great English.
Okay.
Right. He speaks wonderful English. So, but one of the things that they commented on when they were listening to these episodes, they were like, it's really hard to hear Bob. And they were like, you know, Bob's so his microphone, he's so far away. And so Sergio said, well, maybe he's in the kitchen making a sandwich or something. Right. So then as the next episode comes out, they're like, oh, I wonder what Bob's making today. And that's what they're, you know, saying right now.
I love it.
So I assured them that we worked on this and that Bob's microphone gets better. As the episodes get on, eventually, yeah.
Yeah.
He also said, that I have a very soothing, whispering type of voice.
You do,
and it's good bedtime listening. So, Kathy and Sergio, if you're listening to this, Bob's making making a BLT.
I got a BLT. I gotta go get the bread out of the toaster. So.
And I hope you have a pleasant evening and great dreams tonight.
Hey, you know what, Rick? I think we forgot. We've got Brian waiting in the wings here.
I think Brian fell asleep waiting for us. Yeah.
He heard your voice and just nodded off.
All right. Well, maybe we should go wake him up. Let's get Brian here on the show.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right. So, Bob, very excited to have on our next guest.
We are.
You know, so our next guest, Brian Polito, he has been known over the last, 30 years or so, I guess, in the industry, maybe a lot longer. I'm not sure, but he's probably mostly known for his original creation of Chaos Comics, right? Where it was introduced of Evil Ernie and Lady Death and Chastity and a whole bunch of other very cool characters that has evolved over the years. Lady Death's still around. Some new characters that have been introduced. I think La Muerta with his Coffin Comics realm. So Brian has been in the industry for quite some time. So we're very excited to have him on. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. First up, before we get into it, just want to thank you guys, acknowledge you for having a great group. As a longtime Captain America fan, I love the group. I love how it's administrated, and I like the general positive vibe and how everybody's kind of keeping on the topic. And the topic is Captain America, one of my favorite topics of all.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Nice. We appreciate that. It is a great group. Currently well over 4,000 Captain America comic book fans, many creators like yourself who are big Captain America fans. So it's a great community. We're happy to have you part of it. You're certainly a member who you know, occasionally posts, and you're an active member. And I actually have a funny story about that in a minute. But let's get back to why you're here, right? So we've had all kinds of creators on the show. Right. We've had pencilers and inkers and colorists and writers and editors, but all have had something to do with Captain America during the course of their career. We've yet to have on a comic creator that has had nothing to do with Cap until now. And I think for our listeners, they may have a couple of questions. So the first one may be, why is the creator who has nothing to do with Captain America on the show? And I'm going to save everyone the surprise. And of course, you helped us with this because Brian Polito is a huge Captain America fan. And we're going to talk to him about that. The second question our listeners probably have is, what's missing in this picture? So remember when we were kids and there was like a magazine that had pictures, and it'd show one picture and then other pictures and say, what's missing in these other pictures? What's missing here where Brian Polito, who has made a comic career out of making horror comics, supernatural comics, rock and roll comics, bad girl comics, comics that would make Steve Rogers blush. How is Captain America his favorite hero? It's almost as if you were a member of a heavy metal band like Metallica, and someone asked you, who's your favorite musician of all time? And you said, Paul McCartney. Like, what? There's certainly some surprise here. So how did Brian Polito become such a big Captain America fan?
Well, I became a Captain America fan a long, long time ago. I've always been attracted to comic books, the idea of pictures and words coming together. And even as a young person, I actually had some challenges with reading, and comic books really authentically helped me learn to read and learn to read with proficiency. So as early as probably the age of 5, 6, 7 years old, I enjoyed comics. However, there was a particular day in July of 1974. I was in the hometown of where I grew up, Long Branch, New Jersey, and I went to the local pharmacy where they had a spinner rack. And for some peculiar reason, I was attracted to this particular issue of Captain America, which was 176. And it's one of the first classic episode where issue where Captain America decides he's going to quit. It's a very evocative cover. So my fandom for Captain America began on the issue he quit.
Right.
And what I became attracted to initially, I had to go back and think about this. The The graphics on the covers of the 70s books were incredible. The trade dress, the impact of the art, the artists. That was a very impactful cover. But when I read it, there was, I guess, some resonance to what was going on at the time. This was 1974. And just a couple of years prior, the former president, Richard Nixon, had resigned. And that was sort of a mind-boggling concept, particularly then. And here I saw this storyline reflected somewhat fictionally in this story, where ultimately it is revealed that someone very, very high up in the White House might have been the bad guy. And this really caused extreme despair in Steve, and he decided to put down the shield. And as a young person of 13, I just found that very, very evocative. And as a enjoyer of comics, that sort of began my journey of actually collecting them. So being that that was 176, I had all these other issues that I can go get. And I was very, very lucky, because at the time, there were several places where I lived. There was a place called Englishtown, New Jersey, where they had a giant swap meet. And hidden behind a bookstore was literally a golden trove of back issue comics. Like, I got most of the cap run from maybe, let's say, 101 to 176, filling in that gap, paying either 35 cents, 50 cents, or 65 cents for the issue. No joke, no exaggeration. This place was bananas. Wow. And so, you know, it was one of those dream times. Yeah. And I think what I really enjoy, I mean, I enjoy a lot about Captain America to this day. I mean, first, the impact of the costume. Now, people who watch motion pictures these days seem to like tone down costumes, but please understand, as a 13-year-old reading a 70s produced comic book, these things were produced on newsprint, 30-pound, very dull paper, not white and bright. And so to have these bright costumes that were very dynamic and very impactful, that's the way it kind of reached out of the page. Now it's very, very different. Obviously, stuff is printed on bright white paper. So the costume was really impactful. But as I got to learn about the actual man behind the shield and the story, I just really, really liked and identified with Cap, Steve, because he was an aspirational character. And the two traits that I find the most interesting about Cap is I feel that throughout history and the great majority of people writing him, he has an innate sense of fairness. Mm. And I think that's it's a very interesting trait. And I think that's carried on with a lot of the observational writers. And he has an innate sense of decency. So I know those are abstract terms in a sense, but those are two things that I really find very attractive. And I understand that from my career and from what I'm known for and what I personally adore, it just seems like such a wild contrast when I tell people, most people, it's like, yeah, I've been reading and collecting Captain America comics since, without fail, since July of 1974, never missed a beat. Whether I was a poor college student, a poor after college student, you know, the ups and downs of life, I would either always have my 20 cents, my 65 cents, whatever it is, to go down to the store and get my books. So I guess that's the initial attraction of Cap, and actually what kind of keeps me reading all these years later.
Very nice.
So Brian, you mentioned Cap's decency and his fairness, right? As two things, maybe the two things most that you admire about Cap. But what do you think, what is it about Cap that sort of explains the longevity of the character? The fact that Cap's been, for 80 years now, he's been able to sort of move and evolve with the times and remain popular.
You know, it's an interesting question. I've been sort of pondering it, and we can place Captain America in a multitude of stories and then in a multitude of media, motion pictures. And I think that ultimately we all know that Cap really was a skinny guy from Brooklyn named Steve Rogers. And what appealed to the Army officers who were looking into the Super Soldier program was his character. So it wasn't just his physical, certainly wasn't his physical aptitude. What made him the ideal super soldier was really what he was bringing to the table, an emotional maturity, an earnestness, a desire to contribute and participate to the greater whole in the face of all evidence that says he should not have, because he was a 98-pound weakling. So I think that the superheroic version of Steve Rogers still, to me, operates like that. So he's not, Cap's really just not a stuck-up guy. He's pretty much a regular guy. So I do think that Captain America, in a world of characters like Iron Man and gods like Thor, ultimately Cap is a bit of a regular guy, somewhat enhanced and almost a guy next door that you could sort of like relate to. Mm-hmm. And his enhancements are kind of minor. And everything that I believe that Cap has achieved is largely through hard work. So sure, he was enhanced, but he had to train and continue to keep an eye on the ever-changing landscape of the world, which particularly in the Marvel Universe, threats are coming constantly and incessantly. So I must admit, guys, that when the motion pictures were coming out, I was really sort of crossing my fingers and hoping that he'd be portrayed with that real heart, that real soul, and a little bit of an old-time, old-fashioned quality. And I think the movies hit it perfectly. It was pretty emotional for me. I was completely satisfied. I mean, I would assert that characters like Thor were turned a little bit into a clown, but not our Cap. Like they just did a really good job on Cap. So I think those are some of his appeals. He's almost like the guy next door. You could kind of relate to him, but he does these miraculous things and he's just an easy guy to root for.
Yeah, 100%. And it's funny, as a comic fan, right? You were a comic fan first who was lucky enough to work in the industry, make a career out of it, right?
Yes.
Back 9 years ago, in October of 2012, at that Comic-Con, you had posted in our Cap Facebook group, you got a Cap sketch from George Perez. I think it was at the New York Comic Con, right?
Yeah.
That's actually where you and I met. And you may not remember this, but this was back in the day when I was working at Avatar. I was a director of marketing.
Okay.
And me and Jim Kahurek met you at Hooters for dinner. and we sat and we had dinner together, and you were going on about Captain America, and because I'm a captain, you and I connected immediately during that conversation. Now you and I haven't talked since then, so I don't expect you to remember that, but I just remember thinking it was odd to me because you're known for Lady Death, you're known for Evil Ernie and things like that, and here you are talking about Cap, and it was a great conversation. I could tell right away how passionate you were about that. But so when you posted that picture from that convention, I was like, that's when I met Brian. That's cool.
Yeah, it is cool. Well, you know, it's interesting. How and why I create is one topic, but what I enjoy is very much what you'd think I enjoy, but also, you know, I like all kinds of comics and, mm-hmm. With great passion and, different topics. But yes, of course, I do adore heavy metal, and I'm watching monster and horror movies almost every day of the week, but Cap's, it doesn't stop me. Cap's still my dude.
Right. That's awesome. Hey, you mentioned that you were introduced to Cap, I think, with issue 176.
Yes.
And I don't want to put you on the spot, right? Is there a particular story arc, and maybe it's that one, but is there a particular story arc that stands out as your favorite of all time?
Wow. Okay, so I got this question in advance, and I've been ruminating. And guys, this is 44 years of reading.
Right,
so
yeah.
I probably narrowed it down to the top 15. But I know sometimes in the group, there's a poll, like, who's the best team, this, that, and the other. But I like some of the stories you wouldn't expect. So I did like that Secret Empire story, the one that culminated in 176. That was a really good story. However, what I've decided for myself personally, that Roger Stern and John Byrne's very small run was just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I felt that in that short period of time, first of all, the villains are guys like Baron Blood and Mr. Hyde. These guys tell a great story in 1 to 3 issues, and they're, you know, high impact, simple. Cap is totally in the lead. He's making all the decisive moves. I mean, that's one of the many, many great ones for me. Another one that comes to my mind is just a couple of issues, which is it's Kirby's second run, and it's not Mad Bomb. It's actually, I think, 202 and 203, where he jumps over to this weird dimension where there's a bunch of homeless people living in a house. I mean, that's the kind of mania that I do enjoy. And then what is it, 209 or something like that? Arnim's 209, 213, Arnim Zola, the introduction. So that idea that Captain America has such great flexibility where there can be realistic spy stories or James Bond influence stories or this wacky super science, because he has a long history of that. You know, you go back all the way to Tales of Suspense in the 80s somewhere, the introduction of MODOK, the Cosmic Cube. I've always liked that relationship.
I mean, we
could talk about this, you know, your favorites and least favorites for a long time. I think Mark Waid and Ron Garney coming in for the first time was a real nice return to form. I think Waid always, you know, in most of his runs just does a really good job of prioritizing who Cap is and gets right into the adventure. One of the pitfalls I see sometimes with Cap writers is the obsession over the origin, the obsession of tying him right into a current event. Sometimes I just like to see my guy get into a nice adventure, you know, that has a short beginning, middle, and end without this, you know, 2-year overarching plot. And I think, you know, Waid, and especially with Ron Garney on the art, was a real knockout. I mean, there's tons of standouts. So what is it? Daredevil, is it 43? The first time he fights Cap? Mm-hmm. I think it's 43. Tales of Suspense 159, Cap and Nick Fury, drawn by Steranko. Is it 241 versus Punisher? Something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I liked Cap fighting Deathlok with your favorite Mike Zeck covers. Pretty hard to beat. Mm-hmm. The way I look at that one too, it's like Super Soldier of the present and Super Soldier of the future. Because I've always personally viewed Deathlok as another potential version, you know, possibly of Cap if things went wrong, or, you know, Luther Manning was, you know, killed and brought back. He's sort of like a twisted version, I think.
Yeah.
So I could go on. I mean, I think Civil War was a great Cap story, because I think that Cap picked the right side. Tony was wrong.
Amen, brother.
That's what I'm saying.
No arguments. This is Team Cap here.
Right. So yeah, Tony was wrong on that one. What are some other Operation Rebirth? I mean, there's
Waid Garney. Yeah,
yeah. 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 The Waid Garney one, he really kind of set it back up. I did take a note. Civil War. A more recent one for me, the Super Science one was Stuck in Dimension Z or Dimension Z, where Rick Remender did the run with Romita Jr., where he is stuck in an Arnim Zola world.
Yeah.
You know, that one went on for a little extra, I think, maybe, but still just the premise, I thought, especially the first 6 issues, wow, that was really compelling stuff. And I was really getting the feels for Cap. That was a pretty brutal circumstance.
Yeah, right.
The whole idea of like Arnim Zola creating a world, everything on it is hostile to Steve. That was a great premise, I thought.
Yeah, agreed. I think it's a very underrated story.
I think so.
Yeah. Wow, you just went through a whole litany there. and thank you, by the way. You basically just went through highlights of many of our podcast episodes. Right. we're sitting here laughing because it's like, oh, okay. Like, for instance, Roger Stern and John Byrne, just came out, that episode we just that's episode 58 for those who would like to check that out.
I'll definitely have to check that out. In fact I enjoyed the Roger Stern's writing on that so much that as a young writer, before I was ever published, what I did was I took the script of 252, I think it was, with Mr. Hyde, and I I wrote what I saw as if I was the script writer, because I wanted to understand. There was something in the secret sauce of how Stern told that story, and I wanted to understand the architecture if I could. So what I did is I took it upon myself to say page one, panel one, and describe what I see and recreate the dialogue. And that was the beginning of a sort of a training exercise I did for myself in an attempt to just understand the form a little better. And that particular issue is the one I started with, because I just thought that was a fun story, you know, bombs on a tugboat and, you know, Mr. Hyde, great John Byrne art, you know, those super tight Roger Stern storylines.
Yeah. And packed full too. I mean, you know, it just to get through two issues took us nearly 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
you know, because there's a lot of script, there's a lot of captions. Yes. Roger Stern fully packs. You get your money's worth with his writing. Yeah. It's good stuff.
Yeah, he's up there with, do you remember Don McGregor writing Jungle Action? There'd be so much captions, so much dialogue. It's like, where's the art? It's all this writing.
Yeah. And, but then pairing him with John Byrne, just a masterful work, because his layouts were amazing. You know, because you have Roger Stern's story. And I'm thinking right now of when Cap is tied to the front of the bow of the ship, right? And he's got the chains and he's trying to break free from the chains. And Roger Stern is explaining the story and talking about, you know, all of what is the urgency behind this, and what Cap's going a flashback to when the, was it Roxxon? I can't remember the organization.
Yeah, I think it's Roxxon.
Yeah. And they're talking about, you know, how it's almost like having a nuclear bomb, right?
Yeah.
And he starts envisioning what's happening to the city, his friends, his loved ones. This is urging him on. But John Byrne masterfully lays it out so that on one side of the page is Cap struggling with, you know, the chain. On the other side of the page, you're seeing what's happening with the flashback to Roger Stern. They're a brilliant partner.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty fascinating. I wonder if you guys had a chance to see Stern's script to see where Byrne went with it. But that kind of device is one of the few devices really open to comics, that idea that the juxtaposition of the two to increase the tension. Yeah, those guys are naturals. I mean, you know, that type of storytelling, I think, is underrated. It does baffle me why we don't see more of that. For my money, I really like the one or two or three issue thing and then done. Wow. I look back at Fantastic Four 48, 49, 50, Introduction to the Silver Surfer, of course, Galactus and the first Punisher, if you remember, this little crazy robot creature. But that wasn't even three issues. It was 2.5 issues. 48 was sort of taken care of, half of something that was begun in 47, and then the balance. These guys did so much in such a little period of time. So,
I think you're absolutely right on. I mean, when you had said, you know, you were ready for getting back to the adventure, right? And you mentioned Mark Waid, where he understands the character of Cap. He puts him into an adventure and you're done in one or two, three issues, as opposed to a 2-year run of a plot. Yeah. And we just kind of finished that, right? With the coats, right?
Yes.
And we don't know what's coming next. We've had a couple mini series. Yep. We don't know what's happening. You know, I think you and I are on the same page. For my money, I'd like to see a Mark Waid like story where it's more of Cap in adventures. I think I'm ready for a break from, you know, some of that heavier stuff that ties into the current culture. That almost feels like after a while, I'm being lectured to or reminded of what's going on. I want some escapism. You know, I don't mind that story,
right?
But let's mix it up. And it sounds like you're on the same page.
I am on the same page. I mean, speaking to that particular topic, you know, if you go back and you think about the introduction of the Falcon, they were very able to cleverly deal with some issues around race, and yet the entertainment value was super high. So it was really, it was baked in. And so I'm all about going for that particular ride. I do really look for comics for escapism. And although Captain America, for some people, I believe that Cap represents the dream. That's the idea. That for me. And so, and that's fine. And now it's time just to get to adventure. As Captain America fans, the last 5 years, we've had to put up with, in my opinion, things like this secret empire and this notion that he was always a Hydra agent. I wasn't a fan of that. I get storylines like that could be done for, again, 2 or 3 months. We're out. I'm fine. But the idea that it would just stick around for a long time, you know, that became laborious. And then with Coates' long run, I felt that that run was living in the shadow of the Secret Empire storyline. So it was still dealing with it. Mm-hmm. I would have preferred to have said, hey, that happened. We're on to the next chapter. I mean, I think that's one thing that comics can do and comics have done. Like these crazy things happen. Like, well, Galactus does show up. The Earth is almost threatened. The problem is taken care of. And now we're on to the next thing, as opposed to worrying about, you know, the presence of these cosmic villains. You just kind of comics allow that. So I am with you. I would like to have some fun and get into some adventures and yeah, just keep it kind of simple for a while. I also think too, as longtime Captain America readers, we see a cyclical quality where people are taking a look at certain topics we've just seen covered time and time again. So the idea of mining and remining his origin, mining and reminding his place in things, it's a trope that's just been done a lot. And I just think it's time to, you know, for Cap at least, like, let's have some fun and adventure and escape.
So you brought up Falcon's origin story.
Yeah.
Right.
So, 117.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm, since you're like me, a long time Cap reader, right?
Yep.
And you've read all the various retcons, right? So
yes.
I'm curious on your thoughts, right? So we had the introduction of the Sam Wilson and the Falcon character.
Yep.
Then Steve Englehart, towards the end of his run, decides to retcon it and say that this was a plant by the Red Skull the whole time, and that Sam Wilson was Snap Wilson, and paint that character where he was basically a thug that, you know, he changed into a likable guy that Steve would fall in love with and you know, in a friendship kind of way. But you know what I mean? Like, right.
Yep.
Then we have J.M. DeMatteis. J.M. DeMatteis didn't like that, thought that was a dishonor to Sam's character. And so he retcons the retcon.
Yeah.
And he says, okay, Snap did exist, but it was just for a short period of time after, you know, his mom was murdered and his dad was murdered. And, you know, but he overcame that. And, you know, he wasn't a pawn of the Red Skull. He was his own man. He was his own character. Then you have now, like maybe 5-8 years ago, I think it was Rick Remender who basically comes back and says, yeah, Snap never existed, right? Like that, no, we're not even going to go down that path. As a creator yourself, as a writer yourself, what do you think of other writers coming in and retconning other people's work? Number one, and number two, of all those retcons, as a Captain America fan, which ones did you like? Which ones you disagree with?
Well, this is a fun question. So there's a lot of angles to it. And let me explain my point of view on this kind of stuff by taking a look at the world of heavy metal.
All right.
So for myself, I look at bands that I admire and adore, like Slayer, Iron Maiden, AC/DC. And one of the things I admire about them is they figured something out and they never changed. And I appreciate that about them. When I go to listen to Iron Maiden, within reason, I know what I'm going to get. If I listen to Slayer, I know what I'm going to get. There is no Slayer dance record. Same thing with AC/DC. I know the language of that band and I admire it. And I use personally, speaking for myself creatively, I use that as my guiding light. So I'm not personally a big fan of retcons, obsessive reimagining of and reminding of the origin. Because I believe, let's take Cap's, I'm going to swing around to a direct answer, but let's swing around to Cap's origin. his origin's perfect. Don't change it. And that's not really where the juice of the story is. The juice of the story is in the adventure. The constant obsession and rumination on the origin and the remining is really not as interesting to people overall as one would think. So my answer to you is if let's say I was in charge of Marvel, I'd be really careful on those types of reexaminations, because the way Sam Wilson began in 117, that's our guy. The idea of then saying, you know, in the end, it was a plant and he was really a bad guy. Let's admit it. It kind of diminishes him and says something about him that I don't think is in Sam's actual character. So now, by the same token, these are all company owned characters, and editors in chief change, writers change. They have different thoughts. I guess Remender, you know, just said, okay, I've had it with the, you know, all this stuff. I'm just wiping it out. And it is a bit of the risk that we run. Now, here's another interesting concept that I have about longtime readers like ourselves on Captain America and other books that we adore. The truth of the matter is these books are never designed to be read long-term by anybody. So this is what I believe. I believe that your average comic book by major comic publishers with all the characters that we adore, we are meant to read it for about 3 years and move on with our life. So we catch it during the beginning of high school, and when we graduate and go to college, we're out. That's a concept called churning. And I don't think that anyone is considering that people like us are going to read it for 40 to 50 years. And what I have accepted as a longtime reader is I am going to see Captain America show up as a robot. We're going to have Bucky come back 50 times. There's a cyclical quality to these stories when people kind of tap the well and they've run out of ideas. So the retcon is probably happening on some particular editor-in-chief's watch. They let it go by. However, I'm not a fan of those. So for example, in my character, Lady Death, it's like, she's been Lady Death, her origin, you can read it in the beginning. The origin hasn't changed. If you like the character, don't like the character, it's really about her latest adventures. You know, does she make revelations? Are we ruminating, exploring her being an anti-hero or a hero, things like that? We are, but as far as what people know to be true about this character, we are not tricking the reader. We are not invalidating their experience having read it, and we're just keeping it steady as she goes. So I think that's the thing I really personally attempt to be real careful about. And again, I'll look at a band like Iron Maiden, look at their long career and say, oh, okay, they're giving me kind of what I want. And I'm going on adventures with them, and they're presenting new material and new subjects, but it's within their vernacular. It's what they've already established. So in conclusion, there's the original Sam Wilson's the real Sam Wilson. No one should be Cap, except if only Steve Rogers should be Cap. But if Steve Rogers can't be Cap, it should be Sam. And I have spoken.
I love, you know, Brian, I love it. I haven't heard that. I've heard the word churning before, but only in the context of butter. But it seems to make sense, because we do see this sort of cyclical nature. You know, Cap's lost his powers, right? For those of us that have been around a long time, we're like, "Jiminy Cricket, how many times is Cap going to lose his powers?" But you're right. This churning of a new sort of audience, this is, yes, is all new to them, right? Everything, yes, is new again. Bouffant, yes, hairdos and bell bottoms and Cap losing his powers. So, yeah, thank you for, you know, that has me looking at it in a different way now.
You're welcome. Yeah, just something to consider. Yes. I mean, by the time, I think it was like there was a Mike, something with one during the Mike Zeck run where there was this giant Captain America. I'm like, okay, here we go. It just gets so crazy. Or Android Bucky. It's like, okay, people have run out of ideas. We've seen it all before.
Yeah. Brian, that was the Ameridroid. I don't see where you have a problem with the Ameridroid.
But then we saw the Ameridroid again and hit it back again in volume six,
I got to go reread the Ameridroid. You know, in the beginning, I didn't like US Agent, but now I like him. So, hey, things change.
That's true. All right. So we've talked about a lot of different creators, right? So what would be your favorite creative team on Cap? If you could pair any writer, penciler, colorist, inker, like you know, you mentioned Roger Stern and John Byrne, but they don't have to necessarily be together. Like you know, if you want to go with Steve Englehart with John Byrne, or what's your dream team for Captain America?
Well, and so I could pick people in their prime and all that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I got to go back to Stan Lee, Jack Kirby. I really liked the late Tales of Suspense run. I think they started hitting a stride. I love Captain America interpreted as a James Bond-like character facing off against super science. I'd actually went back and reread that whole run last Christmas season. And it was interesting because that run began quite quiet and quite subdued. But upon the return of the Red Skull and the Cosmic Cube, things really started going. So I think those guys in their prime, really getting along, I would just like to see that run again, because they just produced stuff that was unfathomable. And really, in the context of time, creators after them always got to refer to what they did.
Yeah.
But they didn't. Like, they're the architects. So that's always boggled my mind. A lot of the writers that have been associated with Cap, they're tremendous. Steve Englehart, J.M.
DeMatteis,
you know, Roger Stern, Mark Waid, the Rick Remender run, they're great. But those Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, I don't mean to be old-fashioned, but those guys were the OGs, and they just were coming up with really, really remarkable stuff.
Did you have a favorite inker for Jack Kirby?
Oh, Mike Royer. Yeah. Now, as much as I adore Captain America, I got to tell you, my complete life obsession is the work of Jack Kirby in general. So, Mike Royer is number one. But I'm not as hard on Vince Coletta as a lot of people are. I'm fine. I liked his run on Thor, but Mike Royer plus Jack Kirby equaled a real unique magic, I think.
Interesting. Hey,
is there another answer? Who else?
I don't know. I mean,
Mike Royer,
he's had a few different inkers,
he's had dozens of inkers. Yeah. I mean, Sid Shores, the list goes on. But yeah, Mike Royer, forget it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, jumping back to present times, we just wrapped up our review of the final issue of the United States of Captain America.
Yes.
And have you read it? And what did you think of it?
So, yes, I also have completed reading the United States of Captain America. And how I would express myself about it was that it was a little below average for me, but let me explain why. So this was a story that for me was overstuffed with characters, and Captain America was not the main protagonist. And I'm going to be very specific. So in the fifth issue, Cap comes up with the plan. They rally around the plan. They go to execute the plan. And it turns out the plan was wrong and it was a trap. Then it was up to Bucky and all the newer Caps to come and save the day and make the decisive moves. I got to tell you guys, I got to see Captain America drive the story. I have to. So when I was reading that, I don't know if it's cynical marketing ploys to introduce 15 new Captain Americas or not, because they had everybody in there, right? So they had Cap, they had Sam as Cap, they had Bucky, they had US Agent, and they had all the new Cap folk. But I feel what they lost for me, what got lost in the translation is, well, where's my dude? Where's Steve Rogers making the decisive calls in the story? So let me illustrate my point. We all saw the movie Die Hard. And in the first movie, Die Hard, you have Bruce Willis, who's an average guy, down on his luck. He's going to meet up with his wife, see if there's a possibility of reconciliation. A lone man ultimately going up against this group of terrorists, aided maybe psychologically by a guy on the phone downstairs. Every decisive move in that storyline, including facing off against the ultimate villain, was done by the Bruce Willis character. Full stop. Let's reimagine that same story. But now we're going to add his friend, his neighbor, his sister, his brother, his cousin. And instead of having hit the Bruce Willis character do all the decisive key moves that you need to see, Bruce doesn't face off against the ultimate villain. Instead, the brother-in-law does, et cetera, et cetera. So I feel in a single protagonist type story called Captain I mean, this one, let's, I admit it's called the United States of Captain America. So that implies plurality, but the way I view the character is usually singular or he's a leader. At the very least, in that story, in that number five, when Cap made the plan went wrong. And then he, instead of getting trapped, he could adjust and then set everybody on a new course and always lead the story. So that's my expectation. Let me give you one other example of why the story somewhat let me down, and particularly the conclusion. Another thing, I am a longtime reader of the Lee Child book series called Jack Reacher. There's about 21 books in the series. Here's the thing with Jack Reacher. He's going to win every time. There is no doubt about it. It's a detective story, but he's going to win. So the interest, I like that Jack Reacher is going to win every time, and I know it. But what I don't know is how's he going to win? And that's what's really interesting to me.
Yeah.
So in this particular story, United States of Captain America, what I got was a painting of a lot of people who are influenced by Captain America. And yet Captain America didn't get to be the character that they probably were inspired by. They came and they saved the day. So for me, you know, so that's one piece. Then the next piece, I kind of thought that some of these characters, like the Native American Captain America, as an example, I might like to have seen his story, and maybe Cap could be in his story, but I felt it was sort of overstuffed. So that's just my personal feeling on it. As the way the story itself was visually communicated, it felt to me like too many medium shots, and there wasn't any like giant shots or
true.
I don't know, it just felt very medium. So yeah. Yeah. I would also like to say about my opinion, it's only my opinion. it means nothing. I love talking about this stuff. I'm not trying to offend anybody, but I am a reader, and my opinion was it was like, eh.
No, it's a well-reasoned analysis. And I got to tell you, because correct me if I'm wrong, Rick, but this episode comes out December. And so I am very appreciative of the Die Hard movie call out, which is, I think, the penultimate Christmas movie.
That's right.
So, that's true. Yeah, so well done.
Yippee-ki-yay. Listen, I don't know. All right, Brian, I may have to debate you on this.
Well, okay.
So I like, first of all, you brought to light something that I had not even considered. The fact that Cap didn't win the day. Others had to come in and assist Cap.
They literally had to save him.
Honestly, it didn't even occur to me
until
you pointed it out.
Yeah, you're right. We didn't mention that at all.
Yeah, it didn't even occur to me until you pointed it out. I was totally lost on me. But I see where you're going with the analogy of Bruce Willis and Die Hard. I think where I have a differ of opinion on this is the only difference is that was the first Die Hard movie. It wasn't 80 years of Die Hard. If it was 80 years of that character and they finally did that story where his sister, brother, cousin, neighbor came in.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd be, you know, have that big a problem.
Well, okay. Look, can we do this? So what if we recast the ending just a little bit? So this is chapter 5, issue 5. So Cap sets out to do the plan. The plan doesn't go right because it should never go right. But Cap, because he's Cap, recovers and he uses everyone as soldiers to finally go after and solve the ultimate problem with the bad guys. So he finds something unique about every one of the Caps, an aptitude that's unique to that person, and sets them on the course. And he needs all those pieces of the puzzle to finally solve the problem and defeat the bad guys.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to communicate is Cap didn't drive the story.
Right.
So what's I agree the point with of everybody you. Admiring Cap if they can't see him up close? And imagine the end of that particular story, as I told it, at the end, everybody just be really happy. It's like, yeah, that's the guy. That's the guy I admire. Yeah.
Right.
And I think, you know, we talked about this in our review that it felt rushed. You know, the last issue felt like they had to wrap this bad boy up. And it would have been good if they'd had a few more issues to do exactly what you're suggesting. I think that would have played out well. It was unfortunate, however, that it did seem like they just had to wrap that thing up.
Yeah, so I'd like to speak to one other topic within this particular story. I think the characters onto themselves who take upon, you know, the guise of Captain America, it's fine. But I wonder, cynically, is this just an effort to just make more Captain Americas? And, you know, we've seen this compulsion in comics. You know, there's a whole family of Batman characters. There's a whole family of Spider-Man characters. And we've all been reading this material long enough to know that originally there was one Spider-Man, one Wolverine. And but the trend, this is the way companies grow their business, I guess, is Batman has a sister, brother, sister, cousin, literally a dog, all that kind of stuff. That's all part of it. So sometimes I'm reading this piece and I'm feeling a little cynical. It's like, okay, I'd rather have the one juicy Captain America story than the half-baked, half-form characters that I'm supposed to, get on board with. But again, I mean, some of those characters I thought were perfectly interesting and fun, but I'm just wondering what am I supposed to be getting out of this?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. One of the things that I found with the story a little unbelievable for Steve Rogers' character is I just don't see him taking untrained, unprepared, unpowered characters into battle. That doesn't seem like something that Steve would do.
Well, against Warrior Woman and Sin, these are vile, vile people.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, those are great villains to pick in Hatemonger. I mean, they're great villains to pick for the story.
Yeah, I love the villains.
Yeah.
And another, I know maybe you didn't mean this. Maybe the wheels were turning. Hans Gruber, Hatemonger.
That's right.
Yeah, right. I mean, very, very similar accents. So
there you go.
You're a genius.
I think we all spend too much time thinking about this stuff.
Right.
So in conclusion, that one was okay for me, but the crazy thing is I'm going to read the next one anyway. You know, I'll be there. It doesn't matter. And again, I don't bring up my opinion to cause anyone distress. It's my opinion. It doesn't matter. I have friends. I don't know about you guys, but I have friends, dear friends. And we argue about the lineup of heavy metal bands, the way people obsess about sports, you know, what was the best record? What was the best lineup? You know, this band sucked after this point. Like, we're into it. But again, we're all doing it for fun. Like, we're all in about it, but it's all really for fun.
Oh, we're here to talk about what we like and don't like and our opinion. So that's the fun part. Okay, what comes after United States of Captain America? And I'm not talking the Captain America Iron Man miniseries. I'm talking about the next volume, right? Which is going to be volume 10, I want to say.
10, yeah.
Brian, who would you like to see tackle Cap in the next series, in volume 10? What creative team would you like to see on there?
Well, I'll tell you, I know who I'd like to have it to be the writer. And I would like to see Jason Aaron take on Cap for a nice long run. Mm. I think he did a great job on Thor.
Mm-hmm.
I think his current run on Avengers is utterly fun and outlandish, like truly outlandish. But we can work together on figuring out who the heck should illustrate that. Now, what's great is the last 10, 15 years, we've been spoiled with tremendous artists. You know, Steve Epting comes to mind. What an amazing talent during the Winter Soldier storyline, which itself is tremendous. Out of the current talent pool out there, who would we want? The thing about Jason Aaron, I noticed, if you're reading his Avengers, a guy like Ed McGuinness is a explosive, wild kind of storyteller. I would like to see someone who could be closer to the realistic ideal, maybe. So who the heck would that be? So that part I hadn't thought about, but I did think that Jason Aaron would just be really interesting. Again, name check in his Avengers run, it started out with this crazy idea of the Avengers 1 million BC. And they're still, you know, coming to the conclusion of this run. And now they're going to go into the multiverse. And that tends to scratch my itch where I like super science and outlandishness and fun. I mean, I think with Jason Aaron, you know, mission accomplished there, it's just complete lunacy.
All right. Well, hey, you know, we'd like to, I think, throw a couple questions at you from some of our devoted, faithful, committed listeners.
I love
it. So the first one is from Joshua Van Dyne, who saw your video. I think it was for the Love of Comics, celebrating collecting Captain America with Brian Polito back in 2019. And he said that you mentioned that you'd like Captain America to get back to the simple, old-natured hero who goes through trials and tribulations yes. to overcome great odds and just be a hero. So yes. if you were given the opportunity by Marvel to write Captain America comics, how would you steer Captain America back from the given with a storyline that we just departed to something new?
Well, I probably do just what Jason checked out there. I mean, here's the fascinating thing. I just am so, if given the opportunity, certainly I would take advantage of it. But interestingly, it's not quite my ambition to do that kind of stuff. I do what I do and I really enjoy it. But if I were given that opportunity, yeah, my year-long run would probably be singles, doubles, and triples. So trying to keep the storylines really contained. I think that most guys and gals who got on Captain America, they have to tell their Red Skull story. So they're kind of mining the obvious. So although I don't have an answer, I think I would have to go for the less obvious. So I know I probably would be dealing with Baron Blood. I probably couldn't resist not dealing with another sleeper because it's my favorite thing.
Yeah.
I would, maybe in my 12-issue run, I would have like an element of the James Bondian super spy. Then I would go into some sort of mad super science. Maybe then I would do some sort of survival kind of simple thing. And then maybe end it with a Captain America doing something that has to bring a bunch of people together and where he shows leadership. And then I'd probably go back and try to find some of the non-obvious villains, maybe use them a different way. I might not be able to resist using Batroc the Leaper. That's probably obvious, but everyone's got their little Batroc itch.
Yeah.
I would probably resist Red Skull, although everybody wants to put Red Skull up on the board for themselves. Maybe I'll introduce like the lost son of Red Skull, you know, forget Sin, maybe the son.
Yeah, nice, yeah.
The son who's like, you know, really upset with his father who abandoned him. I don't know.
Yeah.
Now, if he was going to rebel against his father, would he be good?
I think he'd be good. Yeah, oh, right, exactly. And then he just couldn't help it because it's in his DNA. You know, it'd fracture him. He'd be schizophrenic.
I love it.
Dual personality. Right, so on the one hand, he shows up. Here we go. We're writing the story. Here he shows up initially. We don't know who he is or what his relationship is. And he shows up as a benevolent force. But there's just something in that DNA, something wrong that's just going to ultimately crack and, you know, lead to it. Maybe another guy to bring back. It's been a while, has it? Dr. Faustus, kind of an interesting character. I love all the Invaders villains. You know, I really do like those crazy old Nazi villains. You know, Warrior Woman was great. U-Man, you know, these types of characters. So maybe it would be kind of maybe my arc would also look at Cap's bicentennial battles, which I thought was just fun trip through a bunch of different arenas and times. You got me started, guys. I don't know what I do.
Well, I just hope, I'm hoping, you know, we've interviewed Tom Brevoort and I'm hoping that he's listening and plants a bug in Alana's ear. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, fair enough. Right on.
Bring it on. All right. Another one of our listeners, Ralph Warner, he asks, Brian, pretend you get the license from Marvel to do a horror-based miniseries. What classic monsters are you having Cap take on? I know you already mentioned Baron Blood, so maybe some other classic monsters that Cap could fight. Who would that be?
Well, you know, Captain America has a long history of encountering monsters as long back as in World War II, encountering Frankenstein and the Invaders.
Right.
So I think I would do a storyline that would span the generations. It would begin probably before Cap meets up with Frankenstein. I'm going to introduce a crazy mastermind, mad scientist, maybe someone like before Arnim Zola. And then this storyline is going to traipse through the years, coming back to the present. And we're going to have a blast because we're going to have fun with all of the Marvel 70s monsters. So that's going to include Werewolf by Night, Tomb of Dracula, Lilith, Satana, Living Mummy. I might throw Killdozer in there. I don't know. And we do need a supervillain, like an arch villain who has an agenda. I can't use Baron Blood, but he'd be a good archetype for that. I would also, like, if I had the ultimate bad guy pitting Captain America to distract him against all these various monsters, what I would like the arch villain to do is to ignite a final sleeper, and that sleeper's ability is to call forth all the giant monsters of the Atlas era.
Yes.
Oh, we got to do that. And then, and then, because it's so corny, it's cool, we might have to have the return of Cap Wolf.
Yes.
Got to do it. Got to do it. But we may also have to take that notion, you know, Cap turning into something supernatural. How about, I was thinking, Ghost Cap, Cap Rider, Cap taking on the persona of a Ghost Rider, perhaps. I don't know.
Franken Cap. Yeah, that's what we haven't
Franken
seen.
Franken Cap. We did that with Punisher, though, right?
Yeah, that was Frank. Yeah.
Franken Punisher.
Yeah. You know, I wasn't going to ask this, but you brought this up, and it got me thinking about, you know, there were a lot of Cap horror stories in the Golden Age.
Yeah.
They haven't been plumbed, you know, haven't taken a lot of those sort of stories and brought them forward and modernized them. And that would be cool.
I would go back and find a underutilized mad scientist from that era and kind of weave that person in. But that'd be fun. I mean, that shows the flexibility of Cap, though, you know, whether it be super science, super spy, or up against straight up monsters, you know, it's always worked. And yeah. So clearly, it's all our first draft here is a complete mess, but there's some enthusiasm, right. So we have to shape it into something.
Well, I know you're very passionate in what you do, and obviously, you have a creative mind. So, for the listeners who want to check out Brian's work, so go to coffincomicsshop.com.
Sure. Right?
So, and there's a link in the show notes of our podcast. You can find the link there. Brian, what are some of the highlights that they can find there?
So Coffin Comics is a contained universe of supernatural inspired characters, also inspired by rock and roll, led by the character I've written for close to 27 years, 28, Lady Death. She's a sword-wielding battle maiden who fights evil in hell and on earth. Most of my characters are anti-heroes. So I really am exploring not the heroic ideal, but the anti-heroic ideal. Another character that we have, and who would I liken Lady Death to for people who are unfamiliar? Meaner Wonder Woman, Red Sonja, these types of characters.
Mm-hmm.
Another character we have is La Muerta. And so La Muerta is a street level revenge story told entirely inside the milieu of the Mexican American experience. And she would have a lot in common with a character like Punisher. There are supernatural overtones as we explore her relationship with a saint called Santa Muerte, the saint of death. We have yet another character who is straight up a villain. Her name is Hell Witch. And throughout my career, for some reason, I'm attracted to telling the stories of villains. And she is a villain. And I find a way to make that character still sympathetic. Now, there are other characters expanding in our universe, but generally speaking, we are like a Metallica record come to life, usually told with a fair amount of sex and violence. These are comics for college age and above, but it is written by a person who grew up loving horror movies, heavy metal, and 70s Marvel monster comics. So that is kind of pretty much what I do. So if that sounds interesting to you, I cordially invite you to check out our wares.
All right.
Yeah, absolutely. Go to coffincomicsshop.com and check those out. And then, of course, you can always catch up with Brian on the Captain America Comic Book Fans Facebook group.
I am on there. I am checking. I got to tell you too, guys, again, I complimented you very much in the beginning, but I also like to say it's just fun in the morning scrolling through and seeing all the gorgeous covers of Captain America. Now, I know I am biased, but Captain America's got the best history of comic book covers. They're just the best. There's so many great ones. And, you know, as fellow fans just post all their favorites, it's just great. You know, it's sort of like getting a dopamine blast of Cap every day.
Thank you very much for that. Yeah, it is a nice little oasis from the rest of the world. We try to keep it that way.
Yes.
So, Brian, it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you and sharing your passion for Captain America with us and your history of the character, your love of the character. So thanks for coming on the show.
The pleasure is all mine. Again, guys, thank you so much for what you do. You definitely make the world a better place, at least according to me.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Well, all right. That was a fun conversation, a lively conversation with Mr. Brian Pulido.
What a lot of energy. It's some great insights too. Things I had churning. Like I said, I just always thought of butter, but it really is the audience. Great, great insights.
Yeah. And I like getting his insight and feedback on some of the different storylines, like, you know, his thoughts on the United States of Captain America, his thoughts on Secret Empire, the Coats Run. He wasn't shy about sharing it. And of course, like he said, just his opinion. Others may differ, but, you know, hey, that's why we had him on, because we wanted to hear his opinion.
Right. And I think, you know, I mean, if we're going to if we distill the whole conversation down, the takeaway is go watch Die Hard this Christmas season.
That's right. Oh, you know, if I had known that that's what we were going to talk about, maybe my beginning, instead of being, "Are you ready to rock?" maybe have been like, "Yippee-ki-yay, mother." Oh, hello. Oh.
Language.
All right. Well, Bob, next episode, we are going to get into a volume of Captain America we have not touched yet.
Yes. Yeah. And I don't know why it's taken us so long, but I'm glad that we finally got around to it.
I know. I mean, it's taking us 61 episodes to get to volume 4. And so volume 4, for those who may not remember, started off in 2002, I want to say, with the John Cassidy art. Right. And it was the post 9/11 story, where Cap taking on terrorists. It was an excellent story, and we won't be covering that. Instead, we're going to be covering issues 17 through 20, which is a story called Cap Lives. And why did we pick this story? Well, because it was a really cool alternate reality story where Captain America is he's, you know, frozen in ice, he's floating, and instead of being found by the Avengers, he's found by the Germans, who, by the way, they actually won World War II. And so it's almost like a X-Men Days of Future Past type story.
Yeah,
because we get to see all these other characters but different versions of them. And Cap, of course, being the centerpiece, the glue that holds everything together. It's a great story written by Dave Gibbons of Watchmen fame, and art by Lee Weeks. It's a great 4 issues. Now, Bob, I'm going to tell you, it's a little long. It's 4 issues, so it gets it's a little long, but totally worth it.
Yeah,
totally.
If you're not near a bathroom, bring like an empty Gatorade bottle or something with you.
Yeah. You may want to take 2 commutes to work to listen to this one. Just saying. All right, so that's next episode. So, as always, Bob, I've had fun wrapping Cap with you.
I have as well. And thank you for the rock and roll spirit tonight, Rick. That made my night.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, he's Bob Lucius and I'm Rick Verbanis. And you have been listening to another episode of the Captain America Comic Book Fans Podcast. ¶¶